Bending the President's Ear.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Getting a meeting with the president hasn't been easy for the big three U.S. automakers. They've been trying for a year to get an audience. Finally today, the CEOs of Ford, Chrysler, and GM will sit down with President Bush at the White House. John Dimsdale tells us what's on the agenda.
First on the list is more affordable health care. U.S. carmakers spend more on health care than on steel. And speaking of steel, they'd like the government to ease restrictions on cheaper imports. They also want more pressure on Asian countries to raise the value of their currencies, which would make foreign cars more expensive. Stephen Zachary at the Center for Automotive Research says the White House has to be mindful of some newly empowered Democratic members of Congress who will champion the domestic carmakers' plight.
I don't think that we would be really even discussing having a meeting already if it hadn't been for the tremendous turnaround that occurred on the election day.
But the U.S. car companies will have to answer why they're making more gas-guzzling trucks and SUVs than their foreign competitors. The Consumer Federation of America's Jack Gillis thinks he knows why.
It appears the Japanese probably have their finger on the pulse of what the American consumer wants.
A new survey from the Consumer Federation finds Americans are demanding more fuel-efficient cars. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Oil prices fell and Wall Street liked it. The Dow climbed 23 points, 0.2% to 12,131. The Nasdaq added 16, 0.7 to 2406. The S&P 500 was up 0.75% to 1384. Oil this morning is trading below $59 a barrel. This week, India's largest private airline, Jet Airways, hopes to get a thumbs up to fly to the U.S. At the same time, the head of the FAA is in India to look out for the interests of U.S. airlines. Miranda Kennedy reports from New Delhi.
India is the world's third fastest-growing aviation market after the U.S. and China. Four U.S. carriers already fly to India, but industry growth is being restrained by the fact that India's airports aren't up to American standards. So the head of the FAA, Marion Blakely, today met with U.S. companies in New Delhi to talk about how they can change that.
When you have a 50% growth in passenger traffic in India in the last 10 months, you've got to see this as an enormous market that will be both important to us from an economic standpoint and a safety standpoint.
A slew of U.S. companies are ready to provide technical and financial help, and the U.S. government plans to install satellite systems and train Indian pilots and engineers. In New Delhi, I'm Miranda Kennedy for Marketplace.
Here's kind of a scary innovation. The cell phone company Boost Mobile has come up with a new service called Social Mapping. Cell phones will have GPS so people can know when their friends are within a 25-mile range. People will be able to turn off the feature if they don't want their friends to know they're close by. This is Marketplace. Colonel Sanders was a real chef, and KFC wants everybody to remember that. Today it's making some changes to the Colonel and to the company name. Here's Bob Moon.
Besides the new logo that puts its famous founder Colonel Sanders in a red apron, KFC is unveiling a worldwide redesign of its restaurants using a not-so-new marketing approach. Signs will emphasize the Kentucky Fried Chicken name and stress the old finger-looking good slogan. Northwestern marketing professor Tim Calkins thinks KFC is trying to recapture what it lost when it adopted its abbreviated name in the early 1990s.
They made the brand a little flatter, a little less different. And in this world, you've got to be different. You've got to be distinctive.
What sets the chain apart, he says, has always been its Kentucky Fried product.
Now they're saying it is chicken, and it is chicken that tastes really good. They're cutting back to their roots. I think that's a smart idea.
In branding, he says, using old and familiar ingredients makes for a good recipe. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The Morning Report comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the National Urban Fellows, preparing people of all ethnic and racial backgrounds for leadership for more than 36 years at NUF.org. By Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by the Duke Executive MBA, developing leaders and accelerating careers around the world with 4 top-ranked executive MBA programs for working professionals. DukeExecutiveMBA.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. When we talk about climate change, we can't forget about the animal world. A conservation group says unchecked global warming could wipe out more than 2/3 of the bird species in some places. That report came out today at the United Nations climate talks in Kenya. The UN is also worried about disease in fish, for example. Reporter Sam Eaton from our sustainability desk went to Alaska to find out more.
Alaska's mighty Yukon River holds one of the last wild salmon runs in North America. The dams and pollution that have all but shut down salmon fisheries in the lower 48 are non-existent here. But fishermen say despite the pristine conditions, the famed Yukon salmon are in trouble.
Now this is a big female. And as you can see, this is really sick flesh.
Stan Zaray is gutting his catch on a remote stretch of the Yukon River near Fairbanks. He says many of the giant king salmon he lands are inedible because of a disease called ichthyophonus. It riddles their flesh with white, fruity-smelling spores that sour the meat.
You know, there's not a single fisher I know that would cut something like this for people food.
Ichthyophonus is common throughout the world's oceans, but has only recently become a problem. University of Washington fisheries professor Richard Kosan has looked at records of the disease going back about a century.
And you rarely ever see it described or mentioned. But since the mid-1980s, it's suddenly showing up in species everywhere. It's showing up in rockfish. It's showing up in herring. We've seen reports now that it's in sockeye salmon in British Columbia. So it's appearing in fish all up and down the Pacific coast.
Kosan says climate change is the likely cause. The Yukon River has warmed 9 degrees over the last 20 years. Summer water temperatures are reaching nearly lethal levels for these cold water fish, stressing their immune systems and making them vulnerable to outbreaks.
When the conditions are just right in the environment, the advantage goes to the pathogen.
Kosan's research suggests that as many as 2/3 of the infected salmon aren't making it to the spawning grounds. But Alaska fisheries managers have yet to do anything about it because they say the science is inconclusive. In Fairbanks, fish processor Virgil Umfenauer worries it will be too late before anything is done. He says ichthyophonus is already digging into his bottom line. He buys whole fish directly from fishermen, which means he doesn't know which ones are diseased until he cuts them into fillets back at the warehouse.
And so if they are, then they go in the trash can and we give them away to the dog mushers as dog food is what we do. So it's a total loss, those fish are, financially.
Umfenauer says lately he's had to toss as many as half the salmon he buys. In Fairbanks, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
It has new